And I read this book. It was about acoustic communication. It was about how sound in everyday life mediates our relationship to environment and how we use it to communicate with each other and so on. And that opened really a totally new field for me. So this was kind of the ignition, probably, for me to enter the non-musical sound world, which I'm still in. So the world of noises, of everyday sounds and so on. And that's how it started, basically. And from there, I then came into interaction game design more or less by accident, and they had no one that knew anything about sound, and I kind of built up in this relatively new fields of interaction game design at the time. This was in the early noughties.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Dr. Daniel Hoog. My next guest is a sound and interaction designer who co-directs the Masters in Sound Design at Zurich University of the Arts. His work explores how sound shapes our experiences, from health technology to movement and education. He's a leader in sonic interaction design and serves on the steering committees for key sound design conferences and awards. Through research, teaching, and hands-on design, he bridges science, creativity, and business. He's also a fellow jury member of the International Sound Awards, which is how we met. His name is Dr. Daniel Hoog, and we'll explore how intentional sound can influence how we feel, move, and interact with the world around us. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Dr. Daniel Hoog.
Thank you so much for joining me, Daniel. I've been looking forward to this as a fellow International Sound Award panelist. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jody, for having me. It's really an honor and a pleasure to be here on your podcast.
Thank you. Yeah. So I love to start off these conversations with a question if you can tell me an early memory of how sound moved you. Do you have one like from your childhood?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it gets me thinking a bit. But I think one memory that I could talk about is I live, maybe just a little turnaround to that. I live close to the river of the Rhine in Basel. It's about 100 meters direct distance, and I passed there my childhood. So I lived under the roof in a roof apartment, like Mansard, and there was a thunderstorm at night once, and we all know the sound of thunder. It's just boom, you know. It's always amazing. But that night I was kind of in a half sleep situation, and somehow the thunder struck the river, which happens occasionally. And yeah, it was not that far away. And that really was an amazing sound. I will never forget it. I can't remember how old I was, either somewhere between 8 and 13 probably, or maybe I was much younger. I don't remember, but I remember the sound because it was like somebody just jumping on top of a huge church organ with the whole body, like really all keys playing at once, including the bass keys down there. So it was really amazing. I have never heard this again. And so I don't know if it was a sound that happened in this space between sleep and reality, so to say, which makes it so interesting. But it really, when I heard it, it was like an organ was hit by something massive.
Wow, that does sound incredible.
It is indeed.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's true.
Oh, yeah. And I love that it may have been more because of you were half asleep. Like that's
I really don't know. It was
your
definitely
brain manufactured music.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It added some frequencies. Yeah. But I mean those thunder hits into the water, they are a different kind of thunder sounds, really. It's really impressive. Yes.
Yeah. I don't recall anything quite so impressive, but I remember that we had glass paneling on our kitchen. Mm-hmm. We had a kitchen extension when I was little, and there was a glass kind of cover over it almost. And so every time it rained, it would make this lovely sound. You could just sit there watching it come down with the glass over top of you. Like it was just, yeah. And I remember sitting like just in our kitchen, like it wasn't, you know.
I can totally relate because as I mentioned, this was under the rooftop. I can't remember the English term. It's a mansarde in French or in German. Okay. And it had also a glass window facing the sky. So I got both basically the raindrops and the thunder slap.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful, comforting sound.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I wonder if that is how you got into sound later. Like, what was the progression? How did you get into sound design? Because that is,
that's
a pretty big leap, I guess.
Absolutely.
So how did you get there? And you're teaching courses at this point?
Yeah, I'm the co-head of a master program in Zurich University of the Arts. The program is called Sound Design. It's part of a larger master program on composition theory, sound engineering, and so on, and electroacoustics. And so my way to there, we founded this master in 2018. And before I was actually working in interaction design and game design. And how I got there was pretty interesting because in my early 20s, I was searching around for what to do, and I had interest in photography and other arts, and also IT, computer technology was always a big topic. So I ended up, because none of the common, you know, like the standard educational offerings were really appealing to me or were too focused. For instance, I visited a jazz school for years and for some time wanted to become a professional jazz pianist. And when we then went through a progress of actually preparing for the exam, for the acceptance, I realized that I couldn't do this like 7-8 hours a day. That would actually destroy my joy of playing the piano. So I realized music for me is a recreational thing, and it's kind of a sensitivity that I have, definitely a musical ear, but it's not something I want to do professionally because that's not how I work.
I totally sympathize. Yeah. I think I'm the same way.
That's probably a similar story that I sometimes hear from people, for instance, who work in sound design in the game industry or in the sound arts, maybe, for instance, as well. They never got really, they have a musical background, but they could not do the 100% musician thing. And also, plus, pianist is really, you know, it's an elbow thing. It's a solo instrument, so
sure,
it's a bit hard. Anyhow, so I then started the study in something called Hypowerk, which is was and still is a rather experimental setup of a School of Applied Sciences degree, which was 50% workshops with international people from design, technology, management, and so on. And 50% was free project work. And that gave me the freedom to explore some topics that nobody kind of told me to do. So it was really a discovery thing. And during that time, I maybe recalled some memories, other childhood memories again. For instance, you know, when the wind turns, there is another strong memory is that when the wind came from, I think, the west, I heard the tramway passing a few hundred meters away. And when the wind turned, I could hear the shooting range, which was actually 6 kilometers away or something, like really far. But the wind and the sound kind of changed the relationship to this environment. And maybe it was this that kind of brought me to the soundscape. topic. So when I was in this Hypoverk doing totally different things in research and design, I suddenly rediscovered this theme through the topic of soundscape, because I found a book by Barry Truax, who was a disciple of Murray Schafer, who coined the term soundscape at the time in the 70s. And I read this book. It was about acoustic communication. It was about how sound in everyday life mediates our relationship to environment and how we use it to communicate with each other and so on. And that opened really a totally new field for me. So this was kind of the ignition probably for me to enter the non-musical sound world, which I'm still in. So the world of noises, of everyday sounds and so on. And that's how it started, basically. And from there, I then came into interaction game design more or less by accident, and they had no one that knew anything about sound, and I kind of built up in this relatively new fields of interaction game design at the time. This was in the early noughties. I kind of built up, what does it mean to teach sound design to non-sound designers or to interaction designers or game designers who are not primarily sound people?
So what does it mean?
It's a good point.
Question.
What does it mean? Yes. Yeah. It means, first of all and foremost, I think it means learning to listen, and not okay. in a paternal way, so to say, but a paternalistic way. But it's more kind of opening up the ears to sensitivity, which was already for Murray Schafer and the soundscape people the entry point to realizing that there is a soundscape around us. So often it starts with listening exercises, and also with, because we are designers, we have to be analytic about our sensory perceptions, about talking about this experience. So that sound is not anymore this wishy-washy thing, you know, that is cool or shit. Sorry, maybe you have to bleep that.
No, it's fine. We're good. This is an adult audience. We're fine.
Excellent. But something you can actually really scrutinize from a design perspective and talk about and then communicate. And yeah, so that is the entry point. And then the other part is, of course, breaking down all these expectations about high fidelity and quality and super expensive microphones and that, and get rid of it and just say, we have a microphone. It can be even in the mobile phone. Nowadays, that's not a problem anymore. It was a bigger problem at the time, or something cheap, you know, and just go out there and collect sounds, and even if it's noisy and so, and then you can become creative and design meaningful sounds, sound shapes, sound gestures, like think about sound in this way and not being scared of it so much, and using simple tools and but having original ideas. And that's something I think where everybody could relate and feel at home, so to say, or find themselves with sound. So that's in a very short, or not so short, but more or less in a nutshell, how to bring sound to non-sound designers. But it's an ongoing story, definitely.
Thanks for taking the time to listen. Quick question. Do you know anyone else who could benefit from hearing more about how powerful sound can be? If so, would you mind sharing this podcast with them? It would mean so much to me. Now, I'll stop interrupting and let you get back to the show.
How does that relate then to branding? Because, you know, you're talking about interactional design, and that is important to every brand out there, I would think. How do you get the higher-ups to understand how important it is?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not super specialized in branding. Actually, I understand myself really as a sound and interaction designer. But there are maybe two aspects. So one is the business aspect that you allude to, like how to communicate that to the higher-ups or to the responsibles in companies and so on. But maybe a step earlier is, or maybe a part of that is that, which I actually use sometimes, you know, introductory workshops that I sometimes have with potential clients or with new clients, to sensitize them to the everything, is to understand that coming from the soundscape idea, that there is always sound around us, and every sound that we hear is coming from some action or activity or movement or some process, which nowadays is more often than not a computational process. So that's that's also something I actually research on a more academic level, like how does this change our relationship to sound if we have, you know, a can that you squeeze and it makes a sound versus you have some smart device that also produces sound, usually stupid beeps that nobody cares about, everybody hates. But anyway, so it's really about, this is our soundscape, right? So that's our sonic environment and that's our relationship to this environment. And by designing it, we design experiences, or we contribute to experiences which are multisensory all the time. So even if there is no sound, there is a sound, but the one that you didn't design. So this is maybe something that where my design education comes in and says, as a sound designer, I'm like any other designer. I can partially define, co-define with the client, with the users, with the customers, how the sonic aspect of this experience will look like.
That makes sense.
Relates to branding, because branding,
of course,
is of course a part of an experience that diversifies one company or one brand from another one. So here we are.
Yeah, exactly. So you've worked on some projects in particular, and I'm wondering if you might have some examples that you could share with us.
Absolutely. So there is this Swiss company called Karoo, which has this ingenious idea of reinterpreting the emergency button that elder people have, that they can press it when they fall and need help. So, right, and you press the button on your wrist, which then triggers a phone call, either your relatives or somebody in a hospital or something like that, or from this service provider that then mediates to the assistance or the first aid people. And they realized this is really the actual innovation, is that this is a stigmatizing technology. It's helpful for sure. On an objective level, there's nothing to say against it, but it's not something that people like, right? So their approach was to combine the idea of smart speakers that at the time were really more popular than today, probably, the high of the smart speaker, with the idea of this emergency button. And they created this screenless device called Karoo, which has it's a white round shape and it has a circular LED around it. And other than that, there is no display except sound, right? So they commissioned me and we interacted quite a lot on an auditor display for this thing. And this was a super exciting process with this. It's a small company, it's an innovative company, and it's a new product where, and this is probably the field where I come in the most, if I come in, not so much in established domains, but more in with little startups maybe that want to try out something. And we did two things, three. I mean, one was the design of something like a startup, a shutdown sound. And that's where branding comes in, right? So if you start up this thing or shut it down, you're in a relationship with the brand indirectly, but primarily, of course, with the product. And the product should be perceived as a friendly, not an assistant really necessarily. That's already too much technology at home, but actually a thing, a beautiful thing that you put on your shelf and has a decorative quality next to a plant maybe. If you visit the website of Karoo, you will see how this is staged. It's exactly this story. It's a nice object that you like to have in your home. And that really changes the story of this whole emergency button thing. So it's touch sensitive and you can touch it and it doesn't require any force. So that requires a sonic language that plays with that. So that is, and that was the design challenge. And at the same time is gentle, responding to fine touch. So it's not a forceful thing, but also at the same time has to be audible because elder people have often limited hearing, right? And at the same time, it shouldn't be disturbing if you hear it repeatedly. So we had a series of sounds switching on, off. There is this call sequence that comes from the device, which I designed a sound that has an evolution over time where we can perceive, because it's always 25 seconds until the actual phone call is produced, to prevent error calls, so to say. So there's several timers, like you have to touch it for 5 seconds until an entry point is made and so on. And the sounds try to support this interaction, and that's where interaction design comes in. They create affordances to tell people, okay, you should keep your finger down a bit longer until the event is triggered. But also they give you always a perception of time on a process that is going on maybe in this black box or invisible space. So like this, we hope to build trust through sound and a relationship, a positive relationship. So, and that's also what I believe is, sound design quality is only one aspect, but the other aspect is to have positive experiences together with a certain sound that makes the sound actually work. Like a coffee machine doesn't make a nice sound, but we love it because it's related to this act of producing coffee, right?
But it should make a nice sound.
I
don't know
like,
why it doesn't.
Don't you like this steam wand?
Oh, okay. Yes, that's a different sound. That, yeah, but you're right. We do associate that with really good things, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And if you would play it back in isolation in a laboratory, probably, together with 10 other sounds or 20 other sounds decontextualized, I'm pretty sure participants would say that it's a rather annoying sound or a disturbing sound in isolation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways,
but that's not the emotional connection to it, though.
Yeah.
But that's where branding comes in, right?
Exactly.
Because sound becomes emotionally contextual with that brand.
Exactly.
And how you feel about that brand is how you're going to feel about that sound, and vice versa.
Exactly.
So,
and if you're lying on the floor, you know, to get back to this scenario, that's the moment when this brand sound comes in, and it should not mean panic. It should not mean emergency, and it should not signify that you have not been careful enough to fall down. You know what I mean? So, like, it's a bit like another project that we did together with students and a German car manufacturer, where one sound was about the belt, putting the belt on. How can we approach warning sounds in a way that are not, you know, insulting and
accusatory.
Accusatory.
Yeah.
Yes. And so in that project, also we have another sound. So we have this ringing sound. We have many smaller interaction sounds. And then we have a drinking reminder.
Oh, yeah. So, that's important.
Yeah. And there, this is also per se, it's nothing new. A drinking reminders exist since a while. I think even my watch has some, you know, kind of fitness smartwatch can make a beep and say you should drink. But we want to push this concept a bit further and try to find out if a sound could also instill the need for drink. Not the need, the wrong word. That would be wrong. That would be a bit manipulative. But how do you say? The incentive or the will to drink?
The desire to.
Desire to drink, exactly. Yes,
yeah,
desire to drink. And also be memorable again and again, because the clients or the users will hear that once an hour probably, that it's not annoying over time and so on, and all these things. And that was, again, I always try to design the sounds in a way that using layers, many layers, really crossing also traces of familiar material sounds with more synthetic stuff, but with the goal that the individual components cannot be extracted clearly, that you get more the feeling of something. And that's what I learned in filmic or game sound design. So, and I bring a lot of this inspiration from science fiction film sound or so to product sound design. The result is that you get a sound that sounds new. Mm-hmm. People might say, oh, this feels a bit like, you know, something familiar, but they wouldn't say it's a dog or it's a door closing or it's a guitar. This is not there anymore. So that allows them to build a new relationship.
That's fascinating.
The business secret.
It's quite the process. It sounds like you're creating almost a wall of sound that blends in together that you couldn't tell what pieces were.
Wall, not the wall of sound in the Phil Spector way, overwhelming, yeah. but kind of really claying things together. So that you cannot, that it's a shape, it's a form, but not, you don't see the individual components so clearly anymore. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, this is Ted Rosnick, and you're listening to the Audio Branding Podcast, a great place to learn about how powerful sound can be. And if you want to learn more about it, keep listening.
I think hospitals should be employing you because, wow, do they need help? Those beeps, those awful beeps that are alarms when you don't need an alarm. Mm-hmm. That's the key, what you were talking about with the, you know, item that tells people you fell.
Yeah, exactly.
it's not there to raise the blood pressure of the client.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually, hospitals could learn a lot with that.
That's true. Yeah. Luckily, I am also involved in some projects with hospitals. Mm-hmm. Actually, since 1 or 2 years now.
That's great.
And we are slowly progressing towards, I'm also in contact with other agencies who work in this field or with researchers, because I'm actually, as I mentioned before, the actual sound design from clients that I do is a smaller part of my time. Most part is research, but always related to fields of application fields. And one important field is health-related sound design, in fact. And I think that's where both sides come together. Sound design with people who are not sound designers, because we want that to be a participatory process. We want to involve nurses. We want to involve potential users in the creation.
People who are going to be stuck in that environment hours after hour. Yeah.
that's the point. And also, it's about relation again. It's not just about the output of the sound as a kind of a product, so to say. It's really... one thing I learned, for instance, when I presented sounds in another project, at first was a rather neutral reaction to it, or maybe even a bit suspicious, because the sound design was a bit unconventional. But I got statements after weeks of collaboration then that people told me, these sounds grew on me. And when I heard that, something clicked, because it means that... it's like music, actually. There are so many. The best albums probably are the ones that are not just, you know, blow you away on the first listen. I mean, The Dark Side of the Moon, or I don't know what, but this is big albums. They take time. They grow on you, and after a while, you learn to know them and build a relationship with them. And it's a bit same with sounds that you encounter in your everyday life. And so I don't want to hear that people are blown away right away from your sound in the beginning, because that means probably that you're a bit too close to conventions or the mainstream.
That's
or something
point.
That AI could produce, you know?
Sure. Yeah, we don't want that.
So we have to go a step further, and AI, maybe that's the one positive aspect. It pushes you to focus on our thinking out of the box and thinking in terms that a probabilistic machine doesn't anticipate, and thus creating sound experiences that are new and maybe take a little bit time to grow on people, but yeah,
that's good. Yeah. I mean, the point being that then those are sounds that they may not get bored of after hearing many times.
Yes. And that
you know, because
have meaning.
UX. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like UX sounds, you're going to hear them a lot. So yeah, it's like you said, it's better to have something that grows on you rather than something that blows you away. Because if you hear that sound that blows you away 15 times in, 10 minutes, it's not going to feel so great anymore.
Yes, exactly. So, can wear thin pretty quickly. Yeah, it's like, it's like watching an Avenger movie, right? So it's like the problem may be of too much big hulks hitting. In the first time, it's impressive and you go like, wow. And then the second and third time. But the 10th time is going to be very annoying.
That is very true. Yeah.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.